We'll look at the tape.
Hogan Johns.
I think we got to come out hard and stay hard.
Part of Chicago's best Bears coverage.
I don't know.
Now, here they are.
They're day-to-day in my mind.
WGN Radio's very own Adam Hogue.
I'm violent.
And the Chicago Sun-Times' Adam Johns.
What an a-hole.
Hug it, chug it, football!
Welcome in, episode 93 of Hogue and Johns. A special episode today. First of all, we'll give this one to Trace Armstrong.
Oh!
Number 93.
Okay. Okay.
Interestingly enough, it was between two guys who primarily played for the Bears and Dolphins. Because the other guy is Adewale Ogunle.
Yes.
Who came over in a trade from the Dolphins. So the Bears traded Trace Armstrong to Miami. They got Adewale Ogunle back from Miami years later. Anyway.
Didn't Trace Armstrong have like an amazing year for the Bears one season? Like 15-something sacks?
Yes, he did. Trace Armstrong had a really good career.
Yeah.
He played for
long years,
which is crazy for a lineman. So you got to give him a lot
He's
of credit.
He's an agent now, I believe.
He is. I saw him at the NFL Combine this year.
Okay.
Yeah, he is an agent. I think he represents a lot of coaches, if I'm
Yes, that is correct. Right.
So he certainly had a very long and good career.
Still productive
in
career.
In football. So, absolutely. So, here's what we're doing today, and you can follow us on Twitter at Adam Hogue, H-O-G-E, at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S. WGNradio.com/Bears is where you can read me. ChicagoSunTimes.com is where you can read Johns. Please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Subscribe there, rate it, review it. We appreciate you doing that. You can also find it on TuneIn, a bunch of other apps that you listen to podcasts with, and check out the WGN Radio app as well because you can listen to the podcast there. So we have spent a lot of time since the draft discussing Peter King's really outstanding draft coverage from San Francisco. I guess technically Santa Clara. He was in the 49ers draft room, and because the 49ers became such a big story in regards to the Chicago Bears and the trade for the number 2 overall pick involving Mitch Trubisky, we spent a lot of time talking about what went down that night, and Peter King just happened to be in the draft room. So we spent a lot of time talking about his pieces. He's written a number of them based on his access, and we just decided, why not have him on the podcast?
Mm-hmm.
Let's have him on and ask him directly what he saw that night and how he thinks it all pertains to the Bears, because most of what he wrote had to do more with the 49ers.
Right.
Obviously, because he was there, but there were certainly a lot of connections to the Bears. So we're doing a little bit of a special episode, something different this week as we have Peter King on. And we'll get into some other things. There's an interesting story on Kyle Long that we definitely need to discuss and some other things as well. But let's go ahead and bring in Peter King. Peter writes for Sports Illustrated, the MMQB.com, and you should also definitely be checking out his podcast, the MMQB Podcast with Peter King, which we'll discuss here in a few minutes as well. But Peter, thanks so much for joining us, and I just want to start with this. I mean, we've all written stories and asked for access, and you never know how it's all going to play out, but have you ever had a story with this such great access work out the way it did? Because as it turned out, the 49ers and Bears really became the story of the draft this year.
Yeah, I really got lucky because this all started with me saying to John Lynch at the scouting combine, or not at the scouting combine, at the league meetings in March, you know, I'd really like to document, you know, because the 49ers have made no bones about saying this is a long-term project. This is the first step in a long process. And so I said, you guys have been very outspoken that you're on the right track and all that other stuff. And I said, why don't you just let me document it? You're going to want to look back if this is what the Bill Walsh first draft was with Joe Montana and Dwight Clark. You're going to really want to document this historic day. And so I ended up speaking to people in the organization and convincing them to let me do it. And so I was fortunate that, and obviously you're a victim of whatever happens And so luckily a lot happened. And I've done this now a few times, but I've never, ever seen a situation where throughout the round there was action. I mean, they never stopped for 4 hours, basically. They were always trying to get up, get back up, as people recall, get back up to get Reuben Foster. And so it was a an odd situation, and it really was pretty newsworthy, so I was fortunate.
Take us back to the moment the trade between them and the Bears go down, and then their reaction, maybe even your reaction, the emotions felt when the trade is made, and then all of a sudden Mitchell Trubisky's name is announced. What were the emotions swirling about in that room at that time?
Well, they sort of figured that this trade was going to happen. They just didn't know who it was going to be. And so basically, when they found out that it was Trubisky, there was a shock in the room, because that meant that they were going to be able to get Solomon Thomas, who was the number two guy on their draft board, and who basically was a guy they really kind of desperately wanted. And so then it all became a matter of, wow, let's take Solomon Thomas and then let's try to make a move, to get Reuben Foster. And obviously, because they had set this up with the Bears over like a 2 week period, it was not a very big surprise that it ended up happening. It was just a surprise who they ended up picking.
And I think that it certainly became a surprise that the Bears traded up, not back, and then, like you said, who they picked. Ryan Pace ends up getting kind of nationally criticized and it becomes a punching bag here because of giving up draft picks that a lot of people think he didn't need to give up. Now, on this podcast, I think we have certainly talked it out to the point where we understand why he did it. I mean, if you're going to be that convinced on one quarterback in this league, a couple threes and a four, if he works out, not a big deal. And if you're going to draft a guy number three overall and he fails, your job's going to be on the line anyway. From your perspective, being on the other side of that phone in the draft, what was your take on what Ryan Pace did? And something that I've kind of concluded is he did such a good job of keeping the rest of the league thrown off that I almost feel like he's being punished for that, because had he not kept it such a big secret, there very well may have been a team that wanted to go up to number two to get Trubisky.
That's the whole issue about all this. It's there's a couple of things that I know that I am not privy to say, unfortunately. There was a real possibility in my mind that this thing could have that they could have made a trade with another team, and I say could have because I honestly don't know if they would have. But there's no question in my mind that there was a chance that this thing was going to that they were going to make a different trade and trade down from two to somewhere lower in the round. Because let me just tell you why. And a lot of people will say, there was no chance that they were going to do that. But you have to understand something. The whole attitude of this team was that we need to have a Cleveland Browns type bounty of picks. And even if we lose one or two players, even if they were going to sacrifice both Solomon Thomas and Reuben Foster, I think they were okay deep down with doing that, because especially Kyle Shanahan, not so much John Lynch and his personnel man Adam Peters, but Kyle Shanahan would have been fine if they got a boatload of picks instead of what they ended up getting. Look, I mean, a lot of people don't want to hear that, and a lot of people don't believe it, but I was there. And I'm not saying it would have happened, but I'm saying that there was definitely a possibility that it could have happened.
Emily Kaplan, who's with you at MMQB, did a great job of kind of detailing the, let's call it a covert operation, the Bears scouting of Mitch Trubisky and how they wanted to keep things secret, asking him to keep their meetings and private workout with him secret. What, you've been doing this for a long time. What does that kind of tell you, one, maybe about the Bears' thinking and how protective teams have become of their real draft interests, especially with, you know, this whole really world of draft, you know, reporting now, especially that's risen.
Yeah, I think here's the thing, Adam, that I have gotten used to now that we see over and over again, there's one or two things every year that sort of shock the world. Okay. Here's the real big thing that I see happening. Remember when Blake Bortles got picked, whatever, 3 years ago by Jacksonville? Mm-hmm. Dave Caldwell did not tell anyone. Okay, he didn't tell the owner of the team. He didn't tell the people on his staff. He didn't tell anybody until a couple of hours or at some point on the day of the draft. He didn't tell a soul. And so the bottom line in all this is that I think that the whole idea is that, you know, like the old war saying, loose lips sink ships. And honestly, that's exactly what Ryan Pace thought, I'm sure. He didn't want anybody to know because he was afraid of the Cleveland Browns with massive draft ammunition. If they found out that they were trading up to number two, you notice that, and you guys, I'm sure, noticed this coming into the draft, that the story on the street was that Vic Fangio desperately wanted Solomon Thomas.
Yep.
For all I know, maybe he did want Solomon Thomas. But afterwards, it was a very convenient narrative to have out there. If everybody knew that the 49ers loved Solomon Thomas and the Bears were willing to trade up to number two, knowing that the 49ers love Solomon Thomas, if that happened, then look at what the result was. You know, they got people off the scent, and no one knew. You look at the way that, you know, the Bears didn't have contact with Trubisky after the draft. It reminds me absolutely of what happened with Jay Cutler and the Denver Broncos with Mike Shanahan, I think, 2006. You know, he had 10 hats at his draft party in Nashville or wherever he was. He had 10 hats, and he didn't have a Denver Broncos cap because he had no idea that they were going to pick him. So the bottom line is this espionage thing has become a big part of the draft, and that's what happened in this case.
One thing I find fascinating after reading everything you wrote about John Lynch, and you also had where you fought – followed him for 24 hours and wrote everything that happened that day. I find two contrasting draft styles here, and maybe it's just this year. We don't know. I mean, John Lynch is in his first year doing this. Ryan Pace is a, you know, a lifetime scout at this point. He's been doing it forever with the Saints, third year as a general manager now. But one thing we saw with Ryan Pace, and we've seen it for 3 years now here in Chicago, Peter, is he really does seem like he sticks to that draft board. I mean, every team says that, but I'm not sure how many GMs actually do it and don't reach for guys. And then with John Lynch, I mean, one of the most amazing details I found from what came out of your reporting in San Francisco was what happened with Joe Williams, the running back, who he basically didn't really have much interest in, and then he gets on the phone with him on the day of the draft and kind of is talked into trading up for him. Maybe you can give more details on that story, but I just kind of found two contrasting styles here with these two GMs, and I'm not saying which one's better or not. We'll find out with how good these players turn out to be.
I think it's also different for a guy like in the fourth round than it is with a guy in the first round.
Sure.
But that absolutely shocked me because this team was not going to take Joe Williams, period. He was not on their draft board. I looked at it. I stared at that draft board with Kyle Shanahan. And Shanahan is the guy who desperately wanted Joe Williams. and basically went into a conversation after that night with John Lynch. And then John Lynch came in early the next morning. In order for him to feel good about this, he had to call Joe Williams on the phone, and he basically had to say to Joe Williams, essentially, bottom line, you got to give it to me straight. We're thinking about drafting you. And so he had this half-hour conversation with Joe Williams, and then at the end of the day, they ended up picking him. But I think that also goes to the fact that if John Fox, I have to believe that if John Fox went to Ryan Pace and said, hey, we got a guy who, you know, has had a lot of problems off the field and blah, blah, blah. This guy can start opening day for us, and he's going to be great, and let's spend a fifth-round pick on him, and let's take a big gamble, and if it doesn't work, what's the worst that can happen? We lose out on a fifth-round pick or a fourth-round pick. And, you know, you don't want to do that every year, but I do think that there's some value to listening to what your coach desperately wants, especially when you have just started out working with him.
That's a good segue to maybe to my next question, Peter. Just in terms of, like, after the draft, the Bears, they have Mitch Trubisky, and then there's reports about possible friction between him and John Fox, CBS, ESPN. Those are out there. I think around here, I think we know that Ryan and John are pretty close. They're pretty chummy with each other. And I'm just kind of curious. I want to compare maybe the local perceptions versus the national perceptions, the circles that you circulate in, and how they're perceived. That here we see them rebuilding and John Fox being a guy that Ryan Pace wants to kind of get things in order for his rebuild. How are they kind of viewed nationally? Ryan Pace, John Fox, and what they're trying to do
as a team. Yeah. I mean, that's how I see him. And look, I've been around this game now for 33 years. And, you know, let's look at another team of people who didn't know each other before they started to work together as GM head coach. John Schneider, Pete Carroll. They're a team. They work together. They like each other. I don't think they do much socially, but they get along well for this team. But I think there are times when Pete Carroll does things to tick off John Lynch. And John Schneider. And there's times that John Schneider does things that tick off Pete Carroll. When John Schneider first raised the specter of drafting Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll thought that it was a little bit loony to take a 5'11 quarterback and give him a chance on a playoff team, you know, to quarterback that playoff team. And so what happened, I think, is that over time, each side gets to know each other, and each side gets to understand that there are going to be some things that this guy does that make me angry and that I don't like. And so I can't tell you right now whether this was a move that John Fox supported, because I don't know. But the one thing I can tell you is that even in the best partnerships, when the guy with the power makes a decision and makes a move, that the other guy who's got to deal with that is not always going to like it and is certainly not always going to be happy with it. But that is the way I sort of saw that happen.
Peter, I know you got to run here in a couple minutes. There's two things I want to hit on with you real quick. First of all, your Monday Morning Quarterback column out this morning, you started to rank every team in the NFL. You're doing the bottom half in this one that came out today. The Bears, you have 28th. I'm not sure anyone's going to argue with that. That's fine. One nugget in there, though, that I at the end, you mentioned that you think Mitch Trubisky starts by Thanksgiving, and then you also wrote, quote, it doesn't matter. Could you kind of explain your thinking there?
Well, because in my opinion, it's going to be very surprising. And look, can Mike Glennon stave this off by playing really well? Yes, he can. But when I say can he stave it off by playing really well, I mean by winning seven games and by being a top, you know, 12 NFL quarterback. And I just don't believe he's going to do that. So therefore, if you follow the logic that, you know, let's say the Bears are whatever, 2-7, I don't even know how many games there are before November, but say they're about 2-7, you know, at some point, Trubisky is going to get a shot. And when I say it doesn't matter, what I mean is that they're not making the playoffs this year anyway. At least I don't think they are. And so your whole goal should be to get this team in the best position possible to be a competitive playoff contender by opening day 2018. And the way to do that, in my opinion, is by, if he's ready, you don't want to throw Mitch Trubisky to the wolves, but if he's ready, he needs to start some games this year.
And lastly, I could probably spend 20 minutes talking with you about your Tom Brady interview that you did after the post, after the Super Bowl.
Fantastic stuff.
On your podcast. I want to ask you, where does Montana rank on the list of places you've traveled for an interview?
Wow. Well, it's funny. You know what happened before that, to sort of make that possible? I asked Brady on Monday, right after the Super Bowl, I said to him that, look, you know, I want to do something memorable. This game was memorable. You're going to look back on this game. Maybe it won't be, you don't think it's the best game you ever played, but it certainly will be the most momentous game you've played. At age 39, coming back from the biggest deficit in Super Bowl history with a heroic victory. And so I said, I want to do something memorable. And so I said, I want to see you in person for an hour this week. And so he thought about it, got back to me, and just said, well, you got a choice. You can either do Friday for an hour in Boston, or you could do Sunday for an hour in Montana. Now, logistically, obviously for me, I live in New York City. Logistically, and in order to try to do this as well as I could, having as much time as I could have after the interview was going to be best. But I said, I got to get this in Montana. Come on, are you kidding me? So I said Montana, and then luckily, you know, he was a good sport about it. And basically, he's on vacation and takes, you know, basically all, you know, an hour and a half at least on his first day that he's away, his first full day on vacation. And he devotes it. And as I've said to people about this, he wasn't press conference Tom. And he 98% of the time he speaks, he's press conference Tom. Mm-hmm. He's very careful about what he says. And so I basically have to hand it to him for not being press conference Tom, for really taking this seriously, and for going into plays deep into plays. Now, luckily, I had spent time with Josh McDaniels after the game, and he had gone in and told me a bunch of things that gave me a little bit of institutional knowledge about specific plays in the game that I could ask Brady about. And that, I was incredibly fortunate to have that knowledge going into it so that I could ask him questions. So then it's almost like, you know, if you have a conversation with somebody, you could either say, hey, so what happened on the 2-point conversion, the direct snap to White, the running back? What happened? I knew what happened. That the last play in practice on Friday, which nobody knew, was a snap by David Andrews, the center, over White and Brady's head. And that was the last play. And the reason they didn't want to do it again, you say, well, geez, how can you have a failed play the last day, last play of practice? Because they knew it was going to work. They knew they would get 2 points on it. And if David Andrews had another snap in practice and it went over their head or he hit it through a ground ball, then McDaniels wouldn't have had the guts to call it during the game. So he said, that's it. It's over. We don't want to do it again. So Josh McDaniels goes to bed Saturday night knowing that he's probably going to call this play and having no idea whether Andrews is going to be able to execute it or not. And so that's the kind of stuff when you ask Brady the questions like that, and know things that happen, then you're going to get a much better answer than if you say, hey, what happened on that two-point conversion?
Well, honest to God, Peter, it's the best post-game breakdown I've ever heard, both in terms of obviously what you knew going into the interview, but also like you brought up. I mean, Tom Brady was like you've never heard Tom Brady before. And I'm sure it helped that he was getting another ring on his finger right after that. But but it was great, and we enjoy the MMQB, and we've gotten to know Emily Kaplan pretty well here in Chicago. She's outstanding.
Oh, good.
So
she's great. Yeah, we're really fortunate to have her. She's been fantastic, and one of the great things that at the MMQB, which enters season 5 this year, the best thing that I did by far is hire young writers, hire Emily Kaplan, Jenny Varentis, Robert Klemko, Andy Benoit, Tim Rohan, the entire staff. And Breer is, 37, so he's pretty young too. But, I mean, everybody else on our staff, the average age of people not named Peter King on our writing staff is 29 years old. And that is so great because they're going to do it different than I did it, and good for them. I'm not the future. They're the future. And so I love sort of giving them assignments and seeing what they can come up with.
Well, it's outstanding. We enjoy reading it. And the great thing about podcasts is that you can go back and find them very easily.
Yes.
So if you haven't heard that Tom Brady interview, go find it. It's the MMQB podcast with Peter King. It's on iTunes. It's on the website. It's everywhere. Thanks so much, Peter,
Thank you, Peter,
for taking the time today. It's great.
Hey, my pleasure, Adams. Have a great day.
All right.
Thank you,
Peter. Peter King, the MMQB.com is where you find him. And that was great. Exactly what I was hoping. Get the insight on what happened in the 49ers draft room and touch on some other things as well. Peter is one of the most fascinating guys to talk to.
If you could pick one, I mean, this guy's been, he's been a role model of mine, looking up to him, someone you kind of envision a career goal as in terms of what he writes and how he writes. What would you pick? Be in the 49ers draft room when something that, I don't want to say outrageous, something that historical happens, or spending an hour and a half with Tom Brady in the middle of nowhere in Montana?
I mean, the fact that he's knocked out both of those since the last football game of the season that was played. I mean, this is like technically off-season work.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. I would probably – that's a tough question, but because I'm so fascinated with the draft and I'd love to spend a night. But Tom Brady after this – less than a week after the Super Bowl in his vacation home in Montana, I don't know how you turn that down.
Yeah.
For 2 hours.
Yeah. What I appreciate about what Peter does and the MMQB does in general is it's insightful, it's informative, and – look, you can have all these breaking news and nuggets and stuff like that. That's fine. It's the Twitter world. The news cycles every single minute. But to have something that you've written that is so deeply insightful, that gives the reader just so much information that they can just digest and surround themselves, soak themselves in, that's the type of writing, especially now in such a crowded media market, especially football-wise. That at least is the football fan that still exists in me and what I like to read professionally. Mm-hmm. That's the type of stuff.
Yeah, and like Peter said, I mean, he has made some good young hires over there. And I told Emily that we're going to have her on the podcast soon too. So if you're not familiar with her work, we'll get you familiar with it because soon, I don't know when, but we'll have her on the podcast relatively soon as well. So again, the MMQB.com, that's where you can find those power rankings today, where he talked about the Bears.
Number 28.
I mean, I don't necessarily think they're going to finish what that would give them, the 32, 31, 30, the fifth overall pick in next year's draft.
Yeah.
I don't know that they're going to be that bad, but these are just power rankings, current power rankings, and it's hard to argue. It'd be hard to argue that they shouldn't be in the bottom five of the league right now.
You know, last night, so I'm sitting there reading, doing research for OTAs and reading things around the league, and this is just some random thought that popped in my head. What if the Bears go 9-7? What if Mike Glennon is
good,
surprisingly better? But what if the defense finds health and production out of all three levels? What if the offensive line stays relatively intact, unlike it didn't last year. And Jordan Howard repeats his success. You know, it's crazy things happen in the NFL. Now, it's just a random thought that popped in my head last night. But look, crazy things happen. Turnarounds happen. Someone gets hot or whatever reason. Teams get hurt. Things can happen.
Yeah, and if they're healthy, which is a huge if in the NFL, especially with what this team has done the last couple of years, but they should be better just based on that alone.
Right.
But we got plenty of time and opportunity to break that down. Let's get to a story that we probably would have been leading the podcast off with had we not had Peter King on. And that is Brad Biggs' story in the Chicago Tribune today that the Bears are, I don't know, you say considering or actually in the putting the motions in place to move Kyle Long to left guard. Another position switch for Kyle Long would be his third position in 3 years. The right tackle thing didn't really work out. I don't think the Bears did him any favors by waiting until the week one of the season.
Well, that's a different situation.
To do that. This is something that sounds like it's already in the works, and it would surprise you because Josh Sitton went to the Pro Bowl. He did last year?
As an alternate.
Yeah, that's right. Playing left guard. So The thinking is they move him to right guard where he used to play for the Packers. So he has experience as a Pro Bowler at right guard. Then they would move Kyle Long to left guard. We can get kind of into the reasoning that Biggs presents, maybe our own thoughts, but just are you surprised by this?
No. Here's why. Let's really, it's a contingency plan. Kyle Long is not going to be in OTAs. He may not be ready by the start of training camp. He may not even be ready by the start of the preseason. That's a long time from now. You won't see him be a part of that offensive line because of what he's dealing with his ankle. He needs to get himself back up to strength, back up to speed. It's planning just in case that Kyle Long is not ready to go by week one. Josh Sitton has considerable experience playing right guard, has been a Pro Bowler at right guard. You need a mauler, they typically say, a good athlete at right guard. Josh Sitton can do that. He's done it. He's been a Pro Bowl at it. So why not move him over? So now you got options at left guard. Eric Kush started a few games there last year. Cody Whitehair was your starting left guard before Josh Sitton was signed last year. So you got Hronis Grisou, who's a lot farther along in his recovery from his torn ACL than Kyle Long is from his surgery on his ankle. He becomes in the mix at center again. So now this is what you're going to hear at like the start of training camp. You know, we're going to get our best five out there. Kyle Long may not be part of that best five because he's not at his best right now physically. So you need to have a contingency plan in place just in case Kyle Long is not ready to go.
Well, I get the sense that there's more guys they believe can play left guard than right guard.
Correct.
So just move Sitton over there to right guard and figure out the left side. I mean, whether Kyle Long's available or not. But, I mean, you just bring up a good point. Like, you're going to have to run practices here without Kyle.
For a while.
So you might as well get these guys playing where they're most likely to play.
Find some chemistry.
And I don't know what's going to happen with Hronis Grisou. Hronis Grisou was starting as a rookie and after Montgomery went down, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he don't know was outstanding.
But he's a rookie coming out of Oregon.
He was thrown in there way earlier than they thought. And I thought last year, it was a limited sample size, but I thought he got off to a great start in training camp. He was bigger. He was stronger. He looked like he had successfully gone through that transition from year one to year two that I always talk about and stress. And Hronis Grisou then tears his
Your
ACL.
Favorite topic. I remember how much you love talking about Hronis Grisou.
Well,
it's your guy. It's your guy. I
don't know that it's my guy because, to be honest, I wasn't a huge fan of the draft pick when it happened. But I did think that last year he was a huge piece of the puzzle. And as it turned out, he gets hurt, the whole offensive line gets shuffled, and they go out and get Josh Sitton, who wouldn't even been available had the Packers not cut him.
Yep.
People forget, like, as unfortunate as the Bears' season went last year with injuries, they were given a gift, right before the season. That offensive line was not in great shape. They didn't really know where everyone was going to play. They were struggling to replace Grisou. They didn't really give Whitehair a whole lot of reps.
No, he had a week just like Kyle Long.
Exactly.
Right, yeah.
And they're lucky that worked out. But they basically got a gift from their rival of, hey, here's this Pro Bowler to come in and fill. And he played well the whole season. So getting back to the original thing, I don't know what's going to happen with Grisou. Maybe he's a bust. Maybe he's a guy that comes back strong and looks like he should be starting, in which case he's probably limited to center, and that's where you put Whitehair at guard, and then I don't know what's going to happen with Long. I'm not sure they're happy with their tackles, so maybe Kyle Long ends up playing tackle one day.
Well,
I don't know.
I don't know if we'll go down that road quite yet because the guy can't be on the field.
But the point is you got to see how this plays out in training camp, and I think in their minds this is all fluid.
Right. It's Ryan Pace has called Hronas Grisou a center only. I think his exact quote was center only. Whitehair's the one with flexibility here. So if
Whitehair might be able to play right tackle.
Yeah.
He's done it before.
Yeah, he's that athletic too. And he's a very smart player. So they got to figure it out. The thing is, they got to figure it out without Kyle on the field today at Halas Hall, tomorrow at Halas Hall, Thursday when they're back on the field at Halas Hall, and then next week, the following week, minicamp. And training camp, if you know, when training camp opens, you always have that list of players that are going to start on the PUP list. It would not surprise me whatsoever if Kyle Long is on that list.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me either. So the schedule is that the first OTA practice, we're recording this on Monday, is today. Mm-hmm. And then tomorrow, so the way they do this for fans looking for Bears coverage OTAs, they only allow us to see one OTA practice per week. So they have three scheduled this week. 10 overall. Let's just put it that way. There's 10 practices overall in OTAs. We get to see three of them. Then they have the veteran mini camp. All three of those practices are open to us. So we'll essentially get to see 6 of 16 practices here in the next 4 weeks.
Forget the guard battle. We get to see Trubisky and Glennon.
Yeah. And by the way, Mike Glennon scheduled to talk to the media
on Tuesday
for the first time since the draft this week. So you'll hear from
first
Mike
time Glennon. Since Mr. Trubisky is on his roster.
So,
and really their work has only started relatively soon. Mr. Trubisky was in Los Angeles for the NFLPA rookie premiere.
Yeah.
So their contact, remember when Trubisky said it was only primary through text messages?
Mm-hmm.
It's finally going to be like the old-fashioned ways, you know.
Well,
man to man.
What John Fox said, they've been in touch, and then it turns out that it was just text message, or they've met, or whatever.
Well, that's, you know what, I kind of get it both ways. Text message is the way. At least they're not DMing each other through Instagram or something like that. Would be
sliding into each other's DMs.
Yeah, that would be awful. So at least they got each other's phone numbers and they've been texting. Maybe there's a group text. Maybe Sanchez is on there. Kenneth Shaw is on there. Loggins is on there. But yeah, text message is a step up over DMs.
I was a math major. I wasn't actually, but
I want to finish on something that's not football.
Okay.
Did you happen to see a tweet of mine last night that kind of went viral?
No, I was off the grid last night.
So
please read.
So LeBron James,
okay,
had a bad game.
Yeah,
last night. I mean, there's not really any arguing about that. By his standard, well, I mean, it's not a great game by anyone's standards, but it's not a horrendous game. But LeBron, 11 points, 6 assists, 6 rebounds, and 6 turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't score in the last 16 minutes of an NBA playoff game.
Oof.
And the Cavs blew a 21-point lead, I think it was, to the
Kyle Love. Kevin Love was hot in the first half.
So here's the thing. A lot of people are annoyed by the MJ-LeBron debate.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be one of those people. I was like, come on. Like, this is too soon to be having this. It's annoying. But I have come around to the idea that it is worth having. And that is a compliment to LeBron James. I think LeBron James is clearly at least the second best player to ever play basketball. Okay?
He's the best player of this generation.
No question. No question. And I think he's so good that we have entered an era and a time where I think it is productive, actually, to have a conversation of who's the best player of all time. And
well, in this town, you can't really have a productive conversation about
that. I understand that, but I just feel like that needs to be prefaced. And one of the – if you've seen Nick Wright on FS1, former radio host in Kansas City and Houston, and used to work with my co-host on WGN, Mark Carmen. And Nick's been on our show a few times. He's been all over the – like he's basically – his career has become not propping up. That's not the right phrase. But he believes LeBron's better than Michael already. And he makes some tremendous arguments. And he throws a bunch of stats out there that support it. They're really good arguments. And I have to say, I think Nick has gotten me on the idea that I'm open to the conversation. I'm open to the conversation. I still think Michael's better.
Okay.
I still think Michael's better. That is my conclusion as of May 22nd, 2017. But LeBron's still playing. And we don't know where this is going to go. But I think it's okay to have these conversations in sports radio. It's sports. People get so offended by this stuff and worked up. It's like, why do you even have the? This is what we do. This is what sports is for. It's okay. It's okay, everybody. Just have fun with it. All right? So anyway, this gets to my tweet last night. The game ends. LeBron had a bad game. And it just prompted me to look up how many times Michael Jordan ever scored less than 15 points in a playoff game.
It's a lot of games to go through.
Here's how many times LeBron has scored less than 15. Because I kind of put 15 as like, if you're a really good player in the NBA, if you score less than 15 in a game, you had an off night. I mean, you could look at other stats. You
well,
could look
15's at like the Tony Kukoc number. Good night.
Yeah, in the NBA, right? So I think that's a fair barometer. Because some people look at, you can go to 20 points, and LeBron has scored under 20 in a playoff game. I think it's 23 times.
Okay.
And Michael only did that 6. But I think once you get to 20 points, you should be discussing other factors of the game. Because you could score 18 in a night and still have a triple-double and have it be a really good night.
Yeah.
I think if you're below 15...
and you're a superstar.
Yeah.
Best players of your generation.
That's a sign that, okay, this has been what's probably a bad game. Anyway... LeBron James has scored under 15 points 6 times in the playoffs. 6 times, which is still pretty good. He's played 209 playoff games.
Yeah.
It's only 6 times. That's really good. Do you know how many times Michael Jordan was under 15 points in a playoff game?
I would say 0.
Never.
Yeah.
It never happened. So I was just prompted to look that up. I got the results. I tweeted it. Oh, man.
The fire?
Oh, ho, ho, ho.
How many national NBA guys tweeted you?
Well, Vincent Goodwill from Comcast Sportsnet came after me.
Yeah.
I mean...
Came after you? What?
He said that it was disingenuous to bring up that stat.
Disingenuous?
Disingenuous to LeBron James.
Why is it disingenuous? Why are your numbers disingenuous?
This is kind of what I wanted to bring up. If you're going to argue that LeBron... Because some people are on the LeBron side of this. If you're going to...
I take it Vincent Goodwill is on the LeBron James side of this.
I mean, I think so.
Okay.
But he's actually of the thinking that he tweeted... One of his other tweets last night was that he doesn't think this conversation should happen even. But he's always coming to LeBron's defense.
Yeah.
The ironic thing about this whole thing is I come to LeBron's defense a lot too. I think he's a really good player. I don't think that's a controversial take there. But if you're going to compare or make an argument that LeBron James is the best player of all time, you're obviously comparing him to Michael Jordan because that's the only guy to compare him to if you're having that argument.
Right.
Okay? So why is it that if you're going to defend Michael or bring up a stat that's in Michael's corner of the argument, why is it disingenuous? Because you immediately get accused of tearing LeBron. Actually, he used those words. He accused me of tearing LeBron James down.
In a 140-character... tweet.
It's just a stat, people. It's not like some giant take. It's just a stat. And it's one of Michael Jordan's most impressive stats. And by the way, like I just said, LeBron James only scoring under 15 points 6 times in 209 playoff games. If that's tearing him down by bringing that up, I quit. It's not tearing him down. I could bring that up as a positive stat for him. This is only the beginning, people.
He's going to go to those finals for a seventh straight time.
Yep.
Some people would argue that Michael's road through the East was much tougher.
Mm-hmm.
But we're arguing about different generations of basketball in a sense here.
The layers to this argument I find to be so fascinating. I'm telling you, go check out. We had a Nick Wright on our show a couple weeks ago. It's on WGNRadio.com. You can find it. Search for The Beat on iTunes. The podcast is there. He just crushed Mark Hardman for like 10 minutes straight. Wow. I mean, I ended the interview and I said, look, I still think Michael Jordan's the better player, but you just destroyed Mark Hardman in this argument. There's no arguing that. So there are points to be made.
Yeah.
That LeBron is at least closing in hard on Michael Jordan.
I will say this, and it'll be a brief comment, that I think a lot of people just hate LeBron James. And that it's him going to Miami, the way he announced it. It's him getting these super teams together, whereas people would argue that Michael wouldn't do that, even though he had Scottie, you know. But
which is why I'm guessing Vincent Goodwill comes rushing to LeBron's defense.
Yes.
Because I that's the thing. I'm on that side. Like, I think that LeBron James is one of the better athletes, better role models, a complete package players that we've ever seen in the history of the game.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and, I mean, he's probably a better role model than Michael Jordan, if we're being honest.
Yeah. I may have missed, well, yeah, some of the off-the-field stuff. Yeah, Michael Jordan was no saint. But I missed your tweet last night, but what I saw this morning was, did you see, you know, the Tom and Jerry, the old Tom and Jerry cartoon of when Tom is getting spanked, you know, and he's going nuts and stuff. They had an Instagram. It's already been, Photoshop's not even the right word, but a video made of it of the Tom character has LeBron's face on it, crying, getting spanked, and the spanker is the Boston Celtics logo, the Celtic guy, spanking LeBron James, who was crying. So I missed your tweet, but I definitely noticed that thing going viral on a Bleacher Report, on Instagram, all over the place this morning.
I didn't see that, but that's funny. The best tweet I saw all weekend was when Always Dreaming lost the Preakness the other day. They put the Michael Jordan crying meme
On the horse.
And it said more like always crying.
Yeah. You know, there's going to be a generation of fans. I don't know if this is true, but I think there's a young set of fans who now equate the best basketball player, here again with, in my opinion, the best basketball player of all time, a transcending athlete who grew his game to international levels. He will be best remembered for his crying face, internet station, viral thing. Not fans maybe 12 years and younger who have no idea what he was like as a player, has only seen Instagram clips. I think it's quite sad that maybe we should put
So the funny thing about the Michael Jordan meme is that it was funny, and then it reached like, all right, enough of this. And then it's almost like when Letterman sometimes would bring up the same like tiny little joke like so many times within one episode, some silly stupid thing that really wasn't funny. He would bring it up so many times that by the last 15 minutes of the show it was hilarious. Like, so that's kind of where I think the Michael Jordan meme went. Like, it crossed into like, okay, like, this is enough of this, and then it kept like, people kept pushing it that it got funny again. Now it's hilarious. I love it.
Yeah, it never ends. I like
someone
the ones,
put it on the Blackhawks logo.
Yeah.
After they got swept by Nashville, like, that's funny.
The best ones are like when they Photoshop it amongst like fans and crowds, where they have like a Steph Curry crying, and then everybody on the Warriors bench has the Jordan crying face meme. But I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, we got to get out of here. But I sometimes I like bringing a non-football thought to the end of the pod, and that was what was going on last night. Don't worry, people. There's still two really good players.
Jordan's better.
Jordan's
better.
Well, not to start the whole thing again, but the fact that he had zero times that he ever scored less than 15. I mean, I just there's a killer instinct that Jordan always had that LeBron.
People question it, yes.
Yeah, and that's all. And that's one of
Jordan's
the things
better.
That's in Jordan's side of the argument. And this is going to keep going, people. It is. but it's fun. Thanks to Peter King.
Absolutely. Thank you, Peter.
Outstanding, and we appreciate his time. A lot of things going on. Actually, the got owners' meetings going on right now. League meeting and...
It's an overtime rule.
Yeah. They're going to finally stop flagging people for celebration in the end zone. Thank God. Because that drives... You know, I think we talked about it at some point during the season. That drives me crazy. Let them have fun. And overtime's going to be shortened by 5 minutes, probably.
Yep.
That's fine.
Whatever.
I mean...
I hate ties in football, though.
It'll reduce the amount of plays, and teams will adapt.
Yeah.
It might... Yeah, teams will go faster. It'll be fine. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Hogue, H-O-G-E, at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S. Read us at WGNRadio.com/BearsChicagoSunTimes.com. OTAs tomorrow at House Hall, so we'll have coverage from there. Mike Glennon speaking. So follow us on Twitter. Read us this week. And we'll get you the reaction from House Hall there. Please rate and review the podcast on iTunes. We appreciate you doing that. Find it on the TuneIn app, the WGN Radio app, and all that. Thanks again to Peter King. We'll talk to you next week on Hogue & Johns.
How big is the
round? I'm not sure how thick it is, but I think it's probably kind of thick. Yeah.